The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello, my name is Cass Sharon, and I'm with Disability Rights North Carolina. For the next half hour, I will be talking with one of my colleagues, Gabriella Bush, about the work of one of our teams called the Representative Payee Team, or Rep Payee Team for short. But before we take a deep dive into that important work, I want to introduce you to Disability Rights NC, sometimes called DRNC. We are an independent 501c3 nonprofit organization and a member of the National Disability Rights Network. As I mentioned, I'm Cass Sharon, and I am on DRNC's communications team. I've been with the agency for 15 years in various positions and absolutely love what this committed, passionate team of people accomplish on behalf of people with disabilities, always with the needs and desires of disabled people centering our work. So what is DRNC? We are the federally mandated protection and advocacy system in North Carolina called the PNA. That PNA part is very important because it distinguishes us from any other agency in the state. That's because we receive federal funding to advance and protect the rights of all people with disabilities of all ages statewide. And with that funding and designation comes a unique, important federal authority. That federal authority, called the PNA's Access Authority, allows us to access any setting where a person with a disability gets services, whether it's in a school, at work, in jails or prisons, or in congregate living settings like group homes, nursing homes, and assisted living facilities, to name just a few. We are empowered to conduct monitoring investigations in these settings, working to keep disabled people free from abuse and neglect. This has been and always will be a critical part of DRNC's efforts. Within our resources and priorities, we monitor various types of facilities to identify, prevent, and remedy instances of abuse and neglect against disabled people and keep them safe. We work to ensure legal compliance, safe conditions, and appropriate services. We identify individuals who could live in the community with supports if that is what they choose. We investigate deaths and allegations of abuse or neglect in facilities, and we advocate for systemic reform. Another important part of the work we do at DRNC is to support self-advocacy among disabled people. Throughout the year, we offer information and referral services, conduct outreach, and provide training and self-advocacy tools to help people with disabilities learn about and enforce their rights. We also engage in public policy advocacy with funds we are able to raise outside of our federal grants. Because our staff is small, around 50 people now, and the needs are great for the nearly 3 million people with disabilities in North Carolina, we have to focus our limited resources on areas the disability community tells us is most important to them. With that input, each year we create a plan to address the greatest threats to the independence of disabled people and the most prevalent violations of disability rights laws. Working with the disability community, we identify the legal problems that are the most pressing, widespread, or that no one else is equipped to address. Then we develop what we call targets to address those problems. Targets guide the work of our legal teams and provide the structure for how we spend our limited resources. For this fiscal year, 2023, which started on October 1st, our targets are the following. Keep students with disabilities in school. Ensure students with disabilities attend school free from abuse, including abusive interventions, such as restraint and seclusion. Advocate for the employment of people with disabilities in competitive and integrated jobs. Enforce the right of disabled people to have equal access to their community. Reduce North Carolina's over-reliance on psychiatric residential treatment facilities, called PRTFs for kids. reduce unnecessary institutionalization of individuals with disabilities, and advance home and community-based healthcare services and supports. Here I want to stop just briefly to tell you about a historic ruling last week in one of our lawsuits. Last week, a judge ordered North Carolina to stop discriminating against thousands of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, also called IDD, and provide them with the services and support they need to live in their communities. The judge directed them to meet measurable goals to achieve the benchmarks in that order. Moving on to the rest of our targets, we protect the housing rights of people with disabilities under federal and state law. We prepare, advise, and advocate for disabled people before, during, and after a state-declared disaster, such as hurricanes or mudslides, and more recently, of course, a pandemic. We advocate for safe and equitable and just criminal processes for people with disabilities. We promote the right of self-determination and enforce the right of people with disabilities to vote. You can imagine how busy our accessible voting team has been recently. You can learn more about these targets, the ruling in the lawsuit I mentioned called Samantha R., and the work of Disability Rights North Carolina at disabilityrightsnc.org. And while you're on our website, please join our mailing list for our newsletter that features 3 to 5 stories each month about our work. You can tell that our small agency is doing a lot of work, and we are thrilled that each month for the next few months we will focus on the work at DRNC. Today is the first of those monthly programs, and we're focusing on the rep payee team. Can you imagine how a small group of excellent investigators could traverse the entire state of North Carolina from the mountains to the coast, interview nearly 2,000 disabled people where they live, make sure they are safe, and that they know their rights, review mounds of financial records, and get help if people are being harmed? Meet Disability Rights NC's rep payee team, and they've been doing this work since 2018. Gabriella Bush is the supervising investigator for DRNC's rep payee team. Before she came to that team, she was an investigator on our investigations and monitoring team, and before then did statewide outreach for the agency. So she brings a wealth of experience and skill to this team. Gabby, to get us started, can you first tell us, what is a rep payee?
Hi, Cass. I'm so glad to be here today and to tell everyone listening about our representative payee program here at Disability Rights North Carolina. So what is a representative payee? If you've never heard of a rep payee, you aren't alone. Also, throughout the conversation today, you will hear me refer to representative payees as rep payees for short. When a person receives a Social Security benefit, that person is called a beneficiary. If they aren't able to manage their own money, Social Security will assign a person or an organization to manage their benefits for them. The person or organization who manages another person's Social Security benefits is called the representative payee. A rep payee ideally is a family member or close friend. This is called an individual payee. Sometimes an organization in the community provides rep payee services. This is called an organizational payee. Organizational payees can be housing providers like group homes or adult care homes, or other types of organizations like county departments of social services or provider agencies. This is usually done for free, but there are some businesses that act as rep payees and charge a fee to provide the service. These are called fee-for-service rep payees. This fee can range from $43 to about $85 a month. The rep payee is responsible for ensuring that the beneficiary's needs are met. They make sure that the beneficiary has food, shelter, clothing, and needed medical care. Any money left over is typically budgeted and given to the beneficiary for them to spend on any other personal needs or wants, but the payee should also help the beneficiary save money for future needs. Organizational payees have to send in a report once a year to Social Security explaining how the money was spent. Payees have to record all income and expenses and keep receipts for all purchases made with SSA dollars. Payees should also help beneficiaries with their goals, such as finding a job if they're interested in that, negotiating with landlords, or helping beneficiaries access other available benefits and services like food stamps and housing subsidies. There are also certain things that a rep payee is not allowed to do, like manage a beneficiary's non-Social Security income, for example, their EIP money, more commonly known as stimulus money. Payees aren't allowed to sign legal documents on behalf of a beneficiary, make medical decisions for the beneficiary, or manage any other income like wages or pensions.
Great. Thank you for that. Tell us what DRNC's role is with SSA beneficiaries and RUP payees.
Our goal is to protect people with disabilities from financial exploitation, abuse, and neglect. On April 13, 2018, the President signed the Strengthening Protections for Social Security Act. This law directs state protection and advocacy system organizations such as DRNC to conduct periodic on-site reviews along with additional discretionary reviews, which we'll talk more about later. In addition, the PNAs conduct educational visits and reviews based on allegations they receive of payee misconduct. A review includes an interview with the RUP payee, a review of the RUP payee's financial records for the sample of beneficiaries, a home visit, an interview for each beneficiary included in the review, and an interview with legal guardians and third parties when applicable. If a RUP payee is found to be mishandling benefits, we work with the payee on a corrective action plan with Social Security's advanced approval of the plan. Social Security does their own follow-up in more significant instances, whether that might be removing the payee and or referring for prosecution.
Wow. Okay. So how did the PNA get involved with working with Social Security and conducting these reviews? Because isn't that something Social Security does?
Well, this work began in 2018. There were numerous shocking national media accounts of RUP payees abusing, exploiting, and neglecting beneficiaries. One of the most shocking stories took place at a turkey farm in Iowa called Henry's Turkey Farm. For more than 30 years, men with intellectual and developmental disabilities were sent to work at the farm and eviscerate turkeys in return for food, lodging, and only $65 a month in pay. The turkey farm owners were also the representative payees for these men and took all of their Social Security money and used it towards room and board. The housing provided was absolutely horrific, basically the worst environment you could possibly imagine. There were holes in the walls, mattresses on the floor covered in feces. It was absolutely horrific. And it went on for over 30 years. If you're interested in learning more, you can search the web for The Boys in the Bunkhouse, where you'll find an amazing New York Times expose and documentary. So the PNA system was created after the shocking footage of Willowbrook School in New York City in the 1970s, and Henry's Turkey Farm was a very similar catalyst to the creation of the RUP payee program within the PNA. Senator Tom Harkin said, quote, "I hate to see what happened to them, but by gosh, something might happen from them," end quote, and it really did. Congress took action, and the PNA system into the oversight of the Social Security beneficiaries. Congress specifically chose the country's PNA because of our expertise in working with and advocating for disabled children and adults, and in monitoring and investigating settings where people with disabilities live, work, play, and learn. Our team in North Carolina had to pass rigorous security clearance requirements and in-depth Social Security training. The requirements are rigorous because the investigations are very specific and because protecting confidential client information is one of our team's highest priorities.
So what does a RUP payee team do? What do they do when they're out?
Our RUP payee team visits all places that disabled people may live, such as houses or apartments in the community, group homes, institutions such as adult care homes, nursing facilities, and our state-operated institutions. A critical part of every review is to talk with the beneficiary. We talk to the beneficiary about the services they are receiving from the payee, if they know how much money they have saved, if they have any communication barriers with the payee, or really any other concern they might have regarding their RUP payee. If there's a legal guardian, we speak to them as well. In some cases, such as with children, we'll talk with several others to make sure that child is safe. That might involve speaking with school staff, church staff, a neighbor, or extended family. Investigators also interview the payee and examine the financial records that Social Security requires us to review. We typically look at a year's worth of financial records for a sample group of anywhere from 2 to 25 beneficiaries. We look at all deposits, withdrawals, expenditures, ledgers, receipts, basically any other documentation that the payee might keep. When we find issues related to the financial plan, we report these to Social Security and issue a corrective action plan. RUP payee reviews can take a few days, but sometimes they can take much longer.
I really like that you all go out and go the extra mile to make sure that you know people are safe and confirm with other people, third-party people. I think that's so important. What are some of the common things that you find on these interviews?
Well, I have to say, really, the most common things we find are probably pretty boring. We find issues like ledgers that don't reconcile correctly, or there's account titling issues. Sometimes payees don't know about their reporting requirements, and so they're late on getting certain reports to Social Security. In those cases, we work with the payee to educate them on best practices and then just send them on their way. But we do have cases where we suspect misuse. We have found beneficiaries living in poor conditions with no access to their money. We've had payees spending money on things that were absolutely not for the beneficiary. No matter how large or small the finding might be, our team reports everything to Social Security, as well as any other regulatory agencies, such as the Department of Health and Human Services, the Fire Marshal, or the County DSS, among others.
So what happens to payees who are misusing beneficiary money?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the majority of our findings are not criminal in nature. There are many, many payees who are very well-meaning and have been in that role for decades with little to no training on how to be a payee. In most cases, we work with those payees to help improve their record-keeping procedures. Sometimes we show payees how to use technology to make their jobs easier. I do a lot of introduction of QuickBooks. Sometimes we work to help them create paper ledgers if that's going to be more accessible for them. It really just all depends on how the payee and the beneficiary would like to work together moving forward. If our team uncovers any proof of misuse, we report immediately to Social Security. Our national partners at the National Disability Rights Network, NDRN, and any local or regional regulators, if applicable. Social Security fully investigates every allegation of payee misuse and will make a formal determination if misuse occurred. We have seen situations where payees have had to pay back funds to beneficiaries and/or they lost their ability to serve as a payee. Of course, if the misuse is substantial, Social Security could also refer the case for criminal prosecution.
Gabby, you talked to me recently about financial dignity. Can you tell the listeners about that? It's such a person-centered way to approach this work and life, I think.
Well, it's pretty early in the morning now while we're recording this, but already I've pulled out my debit card a handful of times. I needed to grab a pack of diapers for my son, so I stopped at the grocery store, and while I was there, I decided to buy something to make for dinner. I ran home to drop off the groceries and quickly hopped on Amazon to buy a gift for a birthday party we have this weekend. After that, I stopped to grab a cup of coffee at a local coffee shop. I also needed gas to get over here to this radio station. That's 4 independent swipes of my credit card just in one short morning, and I didn't think all that much about it. I also interacted with countless people in my community when I was out spending that money. I talked to the barista at the coffee shop. I said hello to my neighbor who was parking their car in the parking lot. Money is freedom. Money is independence. Money is integration into your community. When a person doesn't have access to their money or they can't make choices about their money, they lose a part of their identity and their dignity. We all make poor financial decisions. Maybe I'm in line at the grocery store and I buy a candy in the checkout line that I know I certainly don't need, especially after Halloween. Maybe I buy a pair of shoes I don't need or a car that's outside of my comfortable spending range. But at the end of the day, I can make those choices for myself. A person with a rep payee loses access to their decision-making when it comes to money. Imagine if tomorrow someone took your wallet right out of your purse and didn't let you buy a single thing without their permission. You're losing access to your money, but what else are you losing? Our team is working to bring those things back. We want people to experience financial dignity. People with disabilities have a right to ask questions about their budgets, to help in the decision making, or even to change or remove a payee when necessary.
So you're doing some empowering in this work. Tell us a little bit about the team. What backgrounds and experiences do they bring to this important work?
Well, as I said earlier, our team is made up of 7 individuals, including myself, and we have representation across the state. We have folks in Charlotte, the Asheville area, Raleigh-Durham, Greensboro, Columbus County, and Greene County. Every person on our team has a personal connection to disability, whether they themselves have a disability or a loved one does. And I think those personal connections give our team the heart that it takes to be a tireless advocate. We often say on our team that someone has an advocate's heart. Outside of those personal connections, our team has a wide variety of professional experience. Barbara Daniels joined our team in 2018, and she has over 30 years' experience in the social services field at the local and state level. Prior to coming to DRNC, she retired from the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, Division of Medical Assistance, where she managed a team that provided Medicaid policy training and support to 100 county social service agencies. Connie Dixon, she joined our team earlier this year. And Connie has over 45 years of experience in social services at the local and state level. She retired from the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Service, where she was the program coordinator for the state's Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP, where she did nutrition education and outreach programs. Andy Anderson joined our team in March 2021. Andy has over 30 years' experience working with disabled people through direct residential care, clinical plan development, day programming services, advocacy, strategic planning, and governmental relations. Terrell Comer joined our team in April of this year. Terrell has a master's degree in social work and has previously worked as an adult protective services social worker and a coordinator for community services. Katerin Katie Castro joined the team in 2019 after transferring from the Rep Payee program at our sister P&A in California. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology and minor in social work and previously worked at a sexual assault and resource center as the bilingual services coordinator. Lastly, but certainly not least, Ashley Swayze joined our team in August 2021. Ashley has a master's degree in social work, and in her previous role at DSS, she investigated reports of abuse, neglect, and dependency on the Child Protective Services Unit. So, as you can see, our team comes from a wide variety of backgrounds, and we are all putting it to good use on this team. One major component of our Rep Payee reviews is to help connect beneficiaries and payees to different community services and programs. So having our team based regionally has also been a game changer for us since we have more knowledge of local supports and services.
Thank you, Gabby. How does DRNC know which payees to review?
Each year, Social Security assigns DRNC and all the country's P&A programs specific representative payees that they want our team to investigate. Social Security also invites DRNC to report rep payees we have concerns about, either from complaints made to our agency, from media coverage, or concerns from partner agencies. If Social Security accepts the nomination, they will assign that case to our team for review. On average, we do about 20 additional reviews each year from those complaints or concerns. We've been doing these reviews for so long now that many of the payees and beneficiaries we have worked with previously have come up again in this year's batch of reviews. It's been very interesting to go full circle with some of these payees and see how our corrective action plans from 3 years ago have worked out and how the payees are operating now.
Can DRNC's rep payee team help with other issues, Gabs?
Our primary task is making sure that rep payees are managing a beneficiary's money responsibly. But we also use our time in the field to help people with disabilities learn about other services, supports, and opportunities they might want. As you might imagine, the breadth of the rep payees team's work gives DRNC the unique ability to identify systemic issues in the state, serving as the canary in the coal mine, so to speak. When this team begins to see issues bubbling up in certain geographic areas or across particular types of organizations, we alert DRNC's other teams to those issues. We might raise these concerns with our policy team, our litigation team, or our investigations and monitoring team so they can focus on addressing the system-wide issues. At the same time, we're always mindful to diligently protect the confidential information of the beneficiaries. Since we began this work, DRNC's rep payee investigations have produced many important outcomes, including requiring hundreds of payees to provide written corrective action plans. We've notified numerous law enforcement, social services, and regulatory agencies of issues outside the scope of Social Security's authority. And we help people to know and understand their rights in the community and in facilities. We help them be empowered to self-advocate, access services that they didn't know existed, access DRNC's representation in matters outside the scope of Social Security's authority, potentially regain their own guardianship and have their representative payee removed, and register to vote, to name just a few.
How has COVID-19 impacted the rep payee team's work?
Well, this is rewarding and difficult, time-consuming work, and it has continued even during the unrelenting pandemic, which severely disrupted the team's ability to work on cases in institutional settings. During just one assignment, 4 of the 6 beneficiaries Social Security asked us to interview died from COVID before we could talk to them. We know that COVID-19 disproportionately affected residents in congregate care settings. Sadly, because North Carolina still relies so heavily on the institutionalization of people with disabilities, and because of most of them are Social Security beneficiaries, many of our clients were brutally impacted by COVID-19. As the virus engulfed these facilities, payees often became too overwhelmed and, frankly, too saddened to speak with us for very long. Some of the beneficiaries did not want to leave their room for a telephone call. They feared that if they left their room, they would increase their risk of exposure. And our team worried about that, too. There were significant staffing shortages in these facilities. And as time passed, we observed beneficiaries experiencing neglect and payees struggling to complete their work. Additionally, many new payees were brought in as new hires with little to no transition from previous management. At the beginning of the pandemic, our team made calls to prior beneficiaries and payees to see if they needed PPE to help them understand the economic impact payments, also known as EIP or stimulus money, and their effect on their benefits.
I'm really glad you guys are able to be back in the field again, because that really can make a big difference when you're out there walking the halls of these places and you can see how things smell and what they actually look like. You can peek around the corner. You don't have to rely on the staff member to take you on a video tour. Mm-hmm. What do you do if you have concerns in the field, Gabby? What are your options to make sure people are safe?
Well, every case is different, but our team is always prepared to act on the spot if necessary. We've been witness to or investigated abuse, neglect, exploitation, sexual assault, and even human trafficking. We train our team to not ever leave a review site if someone is in immediate jeopardy. That might look like a call to Adult Protective Services or the police. In other situations, we may want to pull in the payee or the provider staff to have a conversation about what we're witnessing. Depending on the situation, we can also work with managed care organizations, with community providers, legal guardians, and others to make a plan.
Is there anything else you want the listeners to know about today? And really to make sure that if somebody is listening to this and has concerns about a particular rep payee or beneficiary, what should they do, Gabby?
Well, I want everyone to know that there's approximately 6 million payees across the country, and they manage about $70 billion. Even though our team has worked with thousands of folks across our state, our team is small, and the work that we are doing here in North Carolina is only the tip of the iceberg. As I mentioned earlier, this program was created in 2018, and half of the time since then has been during the pandemic, where naturally some of our focus has shifted. I get really excited thinking about the future of this program.
So we want people to call you, right?
Yes. So start with a call to me. If you have a concern, you can call me on my cell phone at 919-971-0236. Or you can also email me at gabriella.bush@ssa.gov. That's Gabriella with 2 L's. And of course, you can always call your local Social Security field office.
So I'm sorry to cut you short, but we've ran out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Cass Sheeran with Disability Rights NC, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service.